right, so I'm Micah Redding.
I don't think we did it like that last time. You know, we just kind of talked some, and then I was like, hey, we need to introduce ourselves. My name is Ryan Hogan.
Yeah, but this is the second time we're doing this episode, so we're doing it all professional now.
Yeah, all professional. We're, like, using, like, I'm not even going to tell you what we're using. We need better equipment. You know, Micah, you know, you need to up your production
Production values are the least of my values, right? So.
Oh, yeah.
That's saying something.
Is, because I know your value systems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, so.
But anyway, so we recorded this episode once before. Wait, we haven't even said what the title of the show is. It is, Did we decide on the title?
Yeah, so I think the canonical title of this show is Unnecessary Abstraction. And although I was toying with Tower of Abstraction and...
That's just frivolously
and
frivolous.
Ladder of Abstraction, because then that would be like playing on things like Tower of Babel, you know, like Jacob's Ladder.
Ooh, Tower of Babel, I like that, Babel.
And Jacob's Ladder. You know, Jacob's Ladder is that, like, little toy that, like, flips around? You know what I'm talking about? Like,
Jacob's Ladder was that thing you did with some yarn, you know, that's tied at the end.
I think that's Cat's Cradle, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, Cat's Cradle. And Cat's Cradle, that's a book by...
Cats in the Cradle and the Solar Spoon.
Cat's Cradle, Cat's Cradle is... That's a piece of imagery in a Kurt Vonnegut book, you know? That one that everybody reads. Because there I am. See, one thing about this podcast is it's a series of pleasant and not so pleasant pedantries.
Right.
Fraught with a copious and overwhelming amount of pedantic...
frivolity.
Pedantic frivolities.
Yes, yes.
Frivolous pedantries.
And frippery.
Frippery. Get your frippery out of you. Yeah. Sorry.
So, yes. Anyway, so, you know, Tower of Abstraction, Ladder of Abstraction. I had a Jacob's Ladder wallet, I think, when I was a kid that was like a little magic trick because you flip it one way and there's money and you flip it the other way and there's no money.
Oh, so like if you're getting mugged, you can just be like, look, man, no money.
Right, exactly. It's crossing ribbons. That's the secret. So, anyway, yeah.
Be careful when you cross your ribbons.
I think that this is going to be called Unnecessary Abstraction. Or is it the plural form? Unnecessary abstractions? No, I think it's...
Yes, I like...
You like the plural?
Indubitably.
Okay, so that's up for debate.
We're flipping a coin later.
Yeah, so anyway...
We're going to engage in an arm wrestling
match. Our first episode of this podcast series...
will go down as the most legendary episode ever.
The first episode of the rest of your life... that we recorded, but did not survive the recording process.
So, you know, it's kind of like that philosophical question that actually I would consider it to be just pig philosophy. You know, it's like when people want to try to pretend like they like philosophy, but they bring up this BS, you know, it's like...
So kind of like what we're doing in this show.
I said once, you don't have to be perspicacious to feign perspicacity. You know, it's like,
So true, yeah.
What I just said wasn't clever at all, but what's clever about it is I enshrouded it in like all this verbose and bombast. Yeah, I obfuscated.
Yeah.
That, to make it sound like I was saying something when really I was just saying a very well-known truth.
Right. And so, what were you saying about the tree falls in the forest?
Well, you know, the tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it.
Right.
Did it really fall, you know, or did it, did it make a noise? That was it. Yeah. I can't even get it right. Look at me. But you know, it's like, you know, you can apply that to our podcast. Did it really happen?
I think we're calling it episode one, regardless. This is episode one, take two.
Episode one, take two.
Yeah, and so that's how this... So
we should get other people to submit their own unnecessary abstractions. Yeah. They can do the redux, and then the take twos. You just have to somehow mention the theme of the the podcast, the theme of the episode once. That's all you have to do. It has to just be in there once.
And then just kind of bounce off of that. Yeah, see, the concept of this podcast, as of right this moment, is that we retire to the study, where we are now, and sit here pondering and so forth on the meaningless abstractions that we encounter in our daily lives. So the first episode, take one instead of take two, was actually about the fact that when I was watching Men of a Certain Age, which is a show, as you may know, about three guys, one of which is Ray Romano.
Is it just three?
Well, three guys with their
three dudes with nothing to lose.
Different scenarios, and one of them
different tropes for different folks. I remember saying that.
Right.
Yeah. So I had to.
It's all flashback.
I had to bring
right
it back
now.
In. Yeah. It's like deja. It's I did not go there, did I? Oh. No more. Deja vu
right,
references.
Too,
We've met our quota for the entire series of this podcast.
That phrase.
It will be forever expurgated.
Right.
Even if I try to say it.
Mm. So
it will be bowlerized and expunged.
Keep you to that, yeah.
And there'll be no trace in the annals of unnecessary abstraction.
So
annals.
Yeah. So anyway. Back to the show. So this show, three dudes, one of which is, you know, dealing with problems with, you know, he's raising a family and his dad doesn't respect him. And one of which is like he's divorced, but he owns his own business. And one of them is like he's a cool actor, but he's getting old and he never quite, you know, made it very successfully. But he like likes to think of himself as like cultured and sophisticated and whatever.
Kind of like us, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Just,
like us.
We're just like some dudes in our respective fields that didn't make it where we wanted, and here we are.
Here we are.
Pondering
right
in the study.
Pondering. And so they every Saturday or something, they have breakfast together, and so they're
is it breakfast or is it brunch? Or is it even blunch?
Blunch.
Here we are, referencing the previous episode.
Yeah.
That was a mental floss.
Callbacks that nobody will
one knows, but we have to make everyone aware. Our two listeners aware.
First episode, yeah, it was so great. So anyway,
Jocund. No, that's
yeah. So the anyway. So Ray Romano is talking about how he was trying to figure out, like, he thinks that he did something, and he thinks that one of his employees may know about it, but he's not sure if his employee knows about it or not, and so he's trying to figure out. And he doesn't want to ask them if they know about it. He wants them to let him know. And so he's in this kind of elaborate, tricky dance of trying to figure out if this person knows without telling them or without asking them if they know. Because if he asks them, then they'll know. And so the actor character comes in and says, oh, you know, that's just like Schrodinger's cat. And what he says then is that he goes into
an explanation
of Schrodinger's cat. And here's what he says, and as soon as he starts, you know, talking about Schrodinger's cat, everybody's like rolling their eyes and so forth. But he's like, oh, well, you see, what it is that a cat is in a box with some poison. And the trick is that you don't know whether the cat's alive or dead, but to see if the cat's alive or dead, you've got to open the box. But the box is set up so that if you open the box, it triggers the poison and kills the cat. So the only way to find out if the cat is dead or alive is to open the box and kill the cat. The only way to find out if the cat's alive is actually to kill the cat. And so he's like, this is just like what you're doing. Now, here's the thing about that. The thing is, that's not Schrodinger's cat. That's more like the I can't say it.
You gotta get this right.
I gotta get it right. Okay, what is it like? The Epimenides. Epimenides.
Well, you know what I learned from my philosophy degree? This is the one thing I took away from my philosophy degree. If you want to come across as a credible source of information and knowledge,
yes,
the most important thing is the way you pronounce things.
That's true. And so... And
now you just botched it. I'll
tell you why I botched it, because...
Proverbial pooch there.
The only way that I ever found out anything is by reading. And so when I read, you know, then I don't know how things are pronounced. And so, like, at a very young age, I was saying things like X-Rox instead of Xerox. And, you know, things like that. Which were both, you know, like maybe Like, I was saying a lot of words that were maybe above my, you know, age range, but were a lot dumber than my age range because I didn't know how to pronounce them.
Yeah, well, I was just going to bring up, you know, if you wanna be taken seriously, you can't say Nietzsche. You got to say Nietzsche.
Nietzsche.
So that's what I learned anyway.
So. Epimenides. So he had
enough paradox. Digression.
Paradox is Epimenides is a Cretan, and he says,
"Ooh, a filthy Cretan." Huh?
Yeah. He invents the phrase "Cretans are always liars," and that's the paradox, because in saying that Cretans are always liars, and himself being a Cretan, he kind of created a "this sentence is false" sort of paradoxical statement.
Oh, and then we started talking about what was that thing we were raised always hearing. It was something, you know, in like apologetics.
Oh, right, was, right.
There are no such things as absolute truths. Well, oh, is that an absolute truth that you just asserted?
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, that's...
So what are you going to do about it?
Man.
Anyway.
Some people love the Epimenides paradox. They love them some Epimenides.
I mean, you know.
What you going to do? So that's more like what he was saying, right? That his version of Schrodinger's cat is like, if you try to find out if the cat's alive, you'll kill the cat. So that's more actually like the problem with the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. But that's
I feel like this isn't even the Epimenides paradox or whatever the complex. Mm-hmm. I feel like again, you know, the one captious person out there, the only person. Yet the captious and punctilious individual who's listening to this is going to, say, you're just as much of a charlatan as this character on this TV show. And they're going to say it's actually more, it's more similar to this complex.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Okay, so this you know, led me to tweet, put on Twitter that...
But Schrodinger's cat is more what?
Schrodinger's cat is simply a thought experiment which is designed to show the audacity of the ideas in quantum physics and show just how preposterous they sound and yet apparently are true. And so the basis of that is that in quantum, the quantum equations, as I understand it, they would look at a particle and they would say, okay, according to the quantum equations, then this particle is actually in two places at the same time, in two different states, or multiple different states. And so physicists didn't really have too much of a problem with that for a while until Schrodinger came along and said, well, let's see what this means. Is what if we hooked up one of those particles that's in two different states to a trigger? And if it's in one of the states, it triggers a bullet to shoot a cat. And if it's in another state, it does not trigger the bullet to shoot the cat. And the cat's in a box with this gun, and it's triggered by this little particle that's in two states at one time. What does that mean? And according to the equations, it means that the cat is both alive
and dead.
Yes. And so that's... it's not so much a paradox in that kind of traditional sense. It's simply a paradox in the sense that this sounds preposterous, and yet this is what the equations seems to tell us, that the cat is both alive and dead. And then when we open the box, what are we going to see? We're going to see one or the other. And then the problem became, for quantum physics, how did it get from the cat being both alive and dead to we seeing it as either alive or dead? Yes.
But anyway.
Yeah. So that's Schrodinger's cat.
That's the cat that Schrodinger
Schrodinger made. Yeah. So I tweeted about that. I said, you know, men of a certain age screwed up the Schrodinger's cat and twisted it into some version of the Epimenides paradox. And the creator of the show,
which oddly enough was still following tweets that were discussing his show, and you didn't hashtag anything.
No hashtags. No, I'm sure, you know. And this is, I didn't realize at the time when I tweeted it that the show has actually already been canceled. And so, so this is a poignant moment actually that we had on Twitter, and it makes sense to me.
You guys had a moment.
Yeah, we had a moment, and he says to me on Twitter, he's like, well, you know, the character is only a pseudo-intellectual, not a real intellectual, so it actually fits, right? And I, you know, wanted to say, touche, sir. You know, this is you know, you are correct. This makes...
I stand corrected.
Yes. This fit perfectly. And I responded, actually, yes, actually that version of Schrodinger's cat, which is not Schrodinger's cat at all, but is actually a more interesting conversational piece, especially in that particular conversation. It fit the thing. It makes sense. It wouldn't have made sense to put the real Schrodinger's cat in there. And so I said, you know, I think that I should start using this fake version of Schrodinger's cat, but I'm going to call it Schrodinger's cat.
Well, or Schrodinger's illegitimate cat, you know?
Ooh, it's like... illegitimate cat, yeah. So, that's what we always...
Schrodinger's, but yeah, Schrodinger's, because that's more malapropistic. Or...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that it's Portmanteauber month.
Yeah,
Add unnecessary abstractions.
Portmanteauber.
You know, because I had that written on my board and hashtagged at work. And
right.
Is
this just a show about Twitter? Is that what this is?
Yeah, because you need, now that you know the tweet,
yeah,
you confusing paradoxes with whatever. I mean, you didn't know it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But see, maybe it was like fortuitous, serendipitous, because now you can find that tweet.
Yeah.
And you can promulgate it to the masses who are listening to us right now.
For
Portmanteauber month.
Right. You have to say it like that kind of bro with Portmanteauber.
Oh, since you mentioned bros, I need to put a plug for my my other podcast. It's a video podcast that I'm going to do with Joe Nolan. And we say we're going to do it. And I'm mentioning it now because, A, it's a shameless plug, and because I want to hold us accountable and actually do it. But we're going to have a video podcast / Google Hangout called Online Bro Time.
Online Bro Time.
So look out for it. You know, we'll just invite some of our favorite bras, and we'll talk about some pretty heady things, but in some very, some pretty vexatious bra language, you know. But anyway, today one of my workmates, Eric, he was telling me that his friend posted this on Facebook. We'll bring Facebook into the mix. Ooh. His friend wanted to start a show similar to Family Feud, but the questions would be structured in a way that you would have to respond with an innuendo. Which, you know, I like to stick a few innuendos in there, if you know what I'm saying. Which is a reference back to our last episode. Episode one.
Episode one, take one.
Take one, yeah. But, so he wanted to call it Family Freud, and
nice. See what you did there.
I see what I did. You know, I slipped it in you an innuendo. Yeah. Oh, and then I told him. Oh, what elicited that though was because I told him about, you know, how we have those games that we like to play, these frivolous games, which we've said frivolous too many times. Mm. We should go back and you know, this is gonna go down to that episode where people count the number of times that we say frivolous, our form of the word frivolous, and I keep saying frivolous. That's our F word, frivolous. Oh, yeah. It's like...
The F word for this episode is frivolous.
Anyway, should always have. But I mentioned how we were trying to come up with a portmanteau, and I don't know, but anyway, you came up with double portmanteandre.
Right.
And that is what elicited the conversation that led to him explaining about his friend's concept for Family Feud. Family Freud.
Schrodinger's cat and Family Freud. I like it.
Portmanteauber.
Perfect. So let's talk about the concept of paradox, Ryan, because in the first take one, I was reminded by myself of this tweet that I'd made much further back in time. And I went and looked it up to see.
But have it right here.
I have it right here.
No, it's so handy.
I found it. And here's what I tweeted. I tweeted.
Hey, the Cardinals won. Sorry.
Turn off that baseball.
It's that time of year for me to be a Fairweather Cardinals fan anyway. Right. Sorry, it's because of the hockey loss.
Here's my tweet.
I can't go into savant mode right now. Sorry.
Right. Wrong kind of savant right now. Here's my tweet.
Savant. It's sexy. Sorry.
Like all mental illnesses these days.
Wait.
We need to have... That's episode two.
Oh,
Take three. Okay, so here's my tweet. Apparently, I use the word sarcasm for irony. The word irony for paradox, the word paradox for self-reference. I'm going to start using the word self-reference for sarcasm so I can complete the loop. Now, that is, like, incredibly, as you say, pedantic.
But hey, you know.
But this is true.
It's like, well, you know, pedantic's a pedantic word, so it all comes around.
Right, exactly. Just so, like this.
Here we are.
Just like this.
Right back where we started.
So, but this is true. Like, when people say sarcasm, a lot of times I think of what I suppose is irony, which I think is, because I looked these up to see if this was actually true.
Yeah, is it ironic that people seldom use the word irony correctly? Or is it not ironic because that's what you would expect?
I don't know. But see,
I
use sarcasm to, kind of indicate, like, things that are in contrast with each other, you know? Which is really more like irony, I think. So that's my thing. And then, but I use irony a lot of times for things that are actually self-contradictory. Or for things that, for things that are actually, like, just kind of baffling or confusing or something like that. And then I use the word paradox. In my mind, paradox means actually the Epimenides paradox, which is this sentence is false. Like, it's a direct self-reference and thus self-contradiction. Does that make sense? Does that make sense, Brian?
I lost you there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, I'm easy to lose because I'm pedantic.
Pedantic. But yeah, paradox to me, as in the famous Gödel Escherbach, which I think is more like Gödel Escherbach.
Gödel Escherbach. Right. Because pronunciation is key.
Yeah, and it's got those, what are those dots? Umlauts.
Umlauts.
Over the O, so it's Gödel. I'm just going to say Gödel Escherbach. And that whole concept of the book is self-reference and how that leads to all kinds of things, which is, which is like consciousness and so forth. But that's what I think of when I think of paradox. I think of self-reference. But apparently paradox is just not that.
Well, paradox, it's just the seemingly...
Seemingly wrong or something like
seemingly,
that.
Seemingly Jesus is paradoxical, right? You know?
Okay, yeah, okay. I got you a little reference there, a little religious reference, and St. Paul... quoted the Epimenides paradox famously.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he did.
And it all comes back to the Epimenides complex.
Yeah, he said, as Paul said, one of their own prophets has said, Cretans are always liars. And then Paul said, this statement is true. Just kind of throwing another loop on it.
He's a wily, twisted man,
yeah.
Well, you know he was gay, right? I mean, I'm sorry.
Whoa.
You know that thorn in his flesh he was
whoa.
You slid that innuendo in there. Wait, now so, I sound like a very insensitive person. And yeah. I am not an insensitive person. I just need to let you know that I am an extremely sensitive individual. Caring and compassionate.
You're sensitive about everything. Anything that somebody could say.
Well, the door's opening.
Whoa.
It's you know, I really like these ocean noises you got going on in the study. It's like...
If you put your ear to the wall, you can hear the ocean.
Well, it reminds me of what I really always wanted out of life. Remember, I'm going there. I just want to be able to jump on a train with someone significant in my life and go to Via Reggio on the weekend. On the weekend, yeah. Go jump on the train and go to Via Reggio on the weekend. That's what I want out of life. So.
Well, what I want out of life
is... If you can help me achieve that end... Please.
What I want out of life is epitomized in the movie. I think it's before, maybe it's after the sunset. I can't get that right. Let's say Before the Sunset with Pierce Brosnan and what's that lady who has the same last name as Tom Cruise?
Penelope.
Yeah, I think that's who's in there.
Penelope Cruz.
Yeah, that lady. So not a great movie, but a great setting. Like, it's, you know, it's set in, I think Woody...
Woody Allen?
No. Not him. There's another one.
Woody Allen. Why are you bringing Woody into this?
I can't think
Woody
of...
Woody Guthrie, huh?
No. Here's Brosnan, Penelope Cruz, and Woody Guthrie.
That's a little anachronistic if you...
Ooh, anachronisms. All right, so that's what I want out of life. Just so
you want Woody, you want to get a Woody
Guthrie at the beach with Pierce Brosnan and Penelope Cruz. That's it.
Right? Life can't get any better than that. I mean, that is the ideal situation. That is the summum bonum of human existence.
Yeah, I think so.
The apotheosis of.
Ooh, yeah. Wait, what did we say we're going to talk about next time? What was the next
thing? We're going to have to go back and listen.
Ooh. Yeah.
Or well, someone can remind us what we're going to talk about. It beats me. I'm totally clueless.
Yeah. So anyway, maybe now people have a general idea of the meaninglessness that is this.
I'm usually pretty nihilistic. Remember I told you, and we're getting a little cross-pollination going on there. Another buzz phrase for all you pseudo-intellectuals out there. A little
internet gurus.
Internet gurus, yeah. Wait, I posited a thesis to myself.
Okay.
Because I was listening to an audiobook, and I got really depressed and existential, and I thought that I would have no other possible option but to have a completely nihilistic outlook. Mm-hmm. But then I finished the audiobook, and then I just felt like I was going to become a god, you know.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Yeah. Anyway.
Flipping it. So that's...
Well, you gotta let it culminate. You gotta let it go full circle, you know?
Sure, we'll hear more about this the story later.
Oh, full circle. You know, that reminds me. When I was in college, I feel like we should be wrapping it up now, but why? Why should we wrap it up? But anyway, look, we'll get this loop going, because, you know, we're all about loops.
And this is looping snake that eats its own tail.
Oh, it's like a helix thing, and it eats its own tail. Look that up, and let me say this.
Yeah, you.
So, you know, I went to this very religious college, and I would always talk about, I would always bring up, Nietzsche and his law of eternal recurrence. The same thing's happening. That's reducing it down too much, but hey, that's what we're all about. Law of eternal recurrence. Whenever I would bring that up, people would invariably say, oh, you mean like Solomon in Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I mean Nietzsche, the law of eternal recurrence. Why are you bringing up Solomon? That's not who I'm talking about. And then I thought, well, maybe Solomon and Nietzsche were the same person.
Oh, good.
Because, you know, like Nietzsche liked to objectify women. Solomon liked to objectify women.
Right.
And I never mentioned that when I said it until just now. I felt, you know, like, inspired to say that.
There's some connection.
Anyway, there's some women objectification, but I mean, you know. So anyway, it was like two guys saying the same thing about the same things happening over time. So I thought, well, maybe they're just the same person.
Yeah.
But then I was like, well, one was, you know, Hebrew, and then one, his ideas, although they shouldn't have, kind of led to the demise of a lot of Hebrew people. So then
you're talking about the Nazis, right?
I think I'm talking about the Nazis. You know? Okay. I'm talking about put that in your show notes.
I think I've heard of them. So actually, that's interesting because the idea of eternal recurrence, doesn't that kind of originate in a lot of Hindu culture and was...
we don't have to be right about anything we posit on this episode. We just pretend like we are. So, is it Hindu? Because I remember I was at a Buddhist temple, and remember that the swastika was originally
that's
a term for an endearing term, like symbol. It was an endearing symbol. It was like, here's like our offer of goodwill to you.
Yeah, but
And then the fascists took it and turned it 45 degrees.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, what I've heard is that the swastika, or swastika, as you say...
Get your swastika out of your...
is this symbol of eternal recurrence in its original form. And so then became part of the...
A bastardization of a good thing.
Whoa, there you go. So that's, I think it all
Which takes
all
ties us back
together.
To Schrodinger's illegitimate cat.
Right. So next time, let's talk about how the Jews defeated the swastika and the law of eternal recurrence broke us out and created history as we know it.
Do you want to do that? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
We're not going to stick to that, but it's a possibility. Anyway, with that,
right,
we're out.
We're out.
Online Bro Time. Check it out.